Hello and welcome to Viewpoints on this week's show. The Cercle de Molière Theatre is celebrating a century of Francophone theatre in St. Boniface, Manitoba.
The Winnipeg community in general is changing, the faces are changing.
The Queen's County Transit System becomes the leader in rural rides in Nova Scotia. Ridership is up by 30%.
It is now part of the infrastructure of Queen's County, keeping people connected one ride at a time.
Layoffs at the GM's Oshawa plant have Ontario NDP demanding to know what the government is going to do to help workers and their families.
GM has made a reckless and political move that is putting the future of so many workers at risk.
Mi'kmaq commercial fisheries look to new markets for their seal oil for humans and pets. Calgary's BMO Center reveals the newest painting by artist Keegan Starlight.
BMO wanted a piece here that really celebrated First Nations culture, that filled the space and created conversations. And Keegan Starlight, the very talented artist, has accomplished that, there's no doubt.
And to close the show, we'll go back to the Red Dress Day held on May 5th across the country. This to remember the thousands of missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit people that were lost over the years.
I think it's a very powerful symbol of the red dress because it is hundreds and thousands of people that should be here, that should be in community, that should be still doing everything they wish to do.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Welcome to you all. My name is Boris Chassin, and I'll be with you for the next half hour. This week will be all about visual arts, theater, community transit, and natural products. We'll also pause to remember Red Dress Day as we pass through British Columbia, Alberta, Manitoba, Ontario, and Newfoundland. But first up to Manitoba, where the Cercle de Molière Theater just celebrated its 100th anniversary. A sold-out celebration held on April 25th brought more than 200 people together in St. Boniface to commemorate Canada's oldest continuously operating Francophone theater. Founded in 1925, the theater has evolved alongside its audience, embracing its Métis and Francophone heritage while growing with the diversity of newcomers. And evolve it did. Outgoing director Geneviève Pelletier handed the reins of the theater to Marie-Ève Fontaine, a native of St. Boniface and a long-time theater artist. She will be the sixth person to take on the role in TCM's history. Ryan Funk in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
A century is a long time, especially for the arts, which is what made Théâtre Cercle Molière's, or TCM's, 100th anniversary such an exciting moment. On April 25th, a sold-out celebration brought more than 200 people together in St. Boniface to commemorate Canada's oldest continuously operating Francophone theater. Artistic and executive director Geneviève Pelletier says the evening was a testament to the theater's deep roots and community connection.
Yeah, it's really exciting. It's heartwarming. It feels like we're on the edge of a new era, so that's really, really fun.
Founded in 1925, TCM has evolved alongside its audience, embracing its Métis and Francophone heritage, while growing with the diversity of newcomers.
It has been part of this community. It resembles its community. The Winnipeg community in general is changing. The faces are changing. Voices are changing. And the key to the success is to be able to evolve with those voices and listen and be there so that they can themselves voice themselves on stage and us as an audience be able to receive the newness of that.
Pelletier attributes the company's longevity to this ability to evolve.
You know, it's a huge mix, and the diversity of it is why I think we're still here.
As part of the centennial celebration, TCM announced the appointment of Marie-Ève Fontaine as the new artistic director and co-executive director, effective July 2025. Fontaine, a native of St. Boniface and longtime theater artist, will be the sixth person to take on the role in TCM's history. Pelletier, who has led the company for 12 years, called the transition bittersweet, but exciting.
It's going to be really exciting to see the next person, Marie-Ève Fontaine, take the reins and see where she wants to go with this. Because every single director has had a real hand, a real vision, and I'm very excited about that.
Reflecting on her own journey, Pellier recalled attending her first TCM show as a 16-year-old student, which captivated her and planted the seeds of a career in theater.
For sure, I was in school, and because we do a lot of school matinees, and it was in the other, it was in the CCFM, and it was called Le Temps des Lilas, so the lilac moment. So I guess it's that effervescent moment where lilacs stay with us only for a very, very short time. And it was a beautiful play on that stage with a big tree, a lilac tree.
She later participated in TCM's Youth Festival, which has now run for over 55 years and continues to nurture new generations of storytellers. Despite some challenges from relocating the theater in 2010 to adapting through a post-pandemic world, TCM has remained a pillar of creativity. As TCM steps into its second century, Pellier says she is optimistic about what is in store for Francophone theater. I'm Ryan Funk.
This is Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick. You are tuned to Viewpoints.
And there was also cause for celebration at Calgary's BMO Center's community wall, where a floor-to-ceiling painting was unveiled. The work entitled Always in My Heart was produced by Tsutsina artist Keegan Starlight. The massive painting is full of vibrant colors, depicting a girl in a red jingle dress petting an ethereal horse in front of the Starlight family teepee. The ceremony brought together people from all walks of life, and Starlight hopes it will inspire many. William Balico in Calgary, Alberta.
The evening of April 30th, 2025 was marked by a gathering to celebrate art, culture, and community as Calgary's BMO Center's community wall unveiled a new artwork. Entitled Always in My Heart, the floor-to-ceiling piece is full of vibrant color. Keegan Starlight, a Tsutsina artist with over 15 years of experience, describes his piece.
The piece kind of depicts a girl in a red jingle dress and standing with an ethereal kind of a horse in front of our family teepee.
For Starlight, this truly was a legacy work, something that he had wanted and dreamt about since his youth.
When I grew up in the Calgary Stampede and having been going to and from the Arts and Western Showcase and being inspired there, talking about how one of these days I'm going to have a piece here at the Calgary Stampede that's going to be about my family and our history.
Joe Kelly, CEO of the Calgary Stampede, shares about the location of this piece and its significance.
Well, we describe this place as the community wall, and it is a huge place at one of the prime entrances of the new BMO Center. And BMO wanted a piece here that really celebrated First Nations culture, that filled the space and created conversations. And Keegan Starlight, the very talented artist, has accomplished that, there's no doubt.
Starlight hopes his piece will inspire all those who see it, especially Indigenous youth. He shares his story and advice for the next generation.
Just take chances. It's really, really hard to get started, but you feel even worse if you don't do anything at all. I grew up with basically nothing. I remember having to go to my mom's office, taking printer paper, and just getting like school crayons, and that's how I started. The only comfortable place that you can ever go to is somewhere that you're comfortable in. So, you know, take chances.
In Calgary, Alberta, reporting for LJI, I'm William Balico.
You're on the air with Viewpoints.
On May 16th, Canadians will celebrate National Seal Products Day, a time to recognize the importance that sealing now has on the fisheries sector. As some countries still have a ban on seal products, Kualipu seal harvesters are nevertheless expanding into other markets. They'll be launching a new product for pets. The product is a seal oil capsule called Waspu. Countries like Japan, South Korea, and Vietnam are already buying them, they say. The company claims the product greatly benefits pets' skin, health, and coat. Tonya, Oregon in Corner Brook, Newfoundland and Labrador.
On May 16th, Canadians will celebrate National Seal Products Day, a time to recognize the important role that sealing has in the fishery. On BFM's Halibut today, Bill Penny spoke about his role on the seal file for the Mi'kmaq commercial fisheries as a business developer. Penny says he's been working closely with the group for about 5 years, around the time when they launched a seal oil capsule called Waspu.
And Waspu is the Mi'kmaq word for seal. So our brand is literally called Seal Oil. We started building that brand, created a website, social media. And then throughout that process, we realized there's a big opportunity on the global stage to represent Halibut First Nation and Mi'kmaq commercial fisheries on opening discussions with foreign governments that currently have seal products banned.
Penny says this includes Taiwan, the European Union, the United Kingdom, and even the United States about reopening seal markets. He says it's a slow process, but other countries are buying their branded products.
We're also currently working with countries like Japan, South Korea, Vietnam, who are buying our seal oil, both our brands. We have customers in Hong Kong and Korea selling Waspu oil, the branded products. We have also created a pet product called Waspu Oil for Pets, which is incredible for pet owners out there who have dogs who are picky eaters or skin issues and all the benefits of a highly potent omega-3.
Penny says over the last few years, Halibut First Nations has sponsored members to become seal harvesters.
So again, within that group of people, it's an aging population, like most of the industries in Newfoundland. So Halibut is encouraging its members to sign up in the spring of the year to do the humane harvesting courses. And then as we can repopulate the seal harvesters and hopefully open up markets for seal products around the world.
National Seal Products Day was established in 2017. I'm Tanya Organ, reporting for the Local Journalism Initiative.
To Nova Scotia to tell you about a community organization based in Liverpool that has been for 7 years providing affordable transportation around Queen's County and beyond with its fleet of 8 vans. It started out with 1 used wheelchair accessible van catering mostly to seniors in Liverpool. Today, Queen's County Transit has become a leader in rural rides in Nova Scotia, and ridership is up as well. It's one of 23 rural transit services in Nova Scotia. But with that popularity come rising costs. That's why the organization recently held its first major fundraiser on May 3rd. And you know what? Success again. The Rural Transit Charity collected last Saturday more than $13,000 towards their vehicle replacement fund. Details with Rick Conrad in Liverpool, Nova Scotia.
A recent fundraiser for Queen's County Transit roared past all the group's expectations. The Rural Transit Charity, based in Liverpool, held its first major fundraiser last Saturday. They teamed up with the Yuck Yuck stand-up comedy tour for a show at the Astor Theatre. Gil Johnson is the chair of the Queen's County Transit Board.
It was a huge success. You know, we had a good turnout. Everybody seemed to enjoy the show. And the end result was that we made a little over $13,000 towards a replacement vehicle for our fleet.
Organizers were hoping to raise $10,000 from the show and a 50-50 draw. Johnson thanked the sponsors and community for their support, and he credited fellow board member Tara Smith with making it all happen.
And if it wouldn't have been for her, it wouldn't have happened. You know, it's no other way around it. She put a team together of volunteers and made this a success that it is. So the rest of us were just along for the ride.
The service began 7 years ago with 1 used accessible van and a team of volunteers. Its fleet has grown to 8 vans, 5 of which are accessible. It also employs 11 people. 9 of those are drivers. It's one of 23 rural transit services in Nova Scotia. Johnson says the success of the fundraiser shows people are starting to hear more about Queen's County Transit.
It is now part of the infrastructure of Queen's County. You know, that service of moving people, keeping people connected. Well, our vision is, you know, keeping people connected one ride at a time.
people are starting to understand that we're there to serve. But it speaks volumes that people really appreciate having a transit system in the county.
Johnson says the money raised will go toward their vehicle replacement fund.
And right now we have an immediate need to replace one of our older vehicles that's costing us as much in the garage as it does to get it down the road.
I'm Rick Conrad.
Hi, I'm Pamela Hassan in Smithers, BC, and you are listening to Viewpoints.
As families of General Motors workers in Northumberland County come to grips with the layoffs at the Oshawa Manufacturing Center in Ontario, provincial lawmakers are demanding to know what the Ontario government will do to help those affected. General Motors last week announced the end of their third shift in Oshawa, impacting 750 direct jobs and many more in spin-off employment in auto parts and manufacturing. This comes as the auto sector braces for the impacts of United States tariffs on Canadian-made automobiles. In the legislature Monday, the new Democrat MPP for Oshawa called GM's move political, while the progressive conservatives are announcing a manufacturing tax credit, hoping this will spur increased investment. Dan Jones in Cobourg, Ontario.
As General Motors announces shift layoffs at its Oshawa manufacturing facility, news of job cuts hit the floor of the Ontario legislature Monday, as lawmakers demanded to know what the province is doing to help the auto sector in the face of direct threats of tariffs from United States President Donald Trump. New Democrat leader Merritt Stiles, leader of the opposition, says that 750 workers will be laid off at the factory and that many spin-off jobs will also be impacted. Oshawa MPP Jennifer French says job losses will have major implications on families in the region.
General Motors has announced the end of the third shift in Oshawa, which means 750 permanent jobs and 1,500 to 2,000 spin-off jobs will be leaving our community. Since President Trump started this tariff war, workers have been bracing for impact, and now GM has made a reckless and political move that is putting the future of so many workers at risk.
Many GM auto workers live in Northumberland County and commute approximately 30 minutes to the Oshawa facility. The provincial government says it is aware of the negative situation at GM. Tyler Alsop, parliamentary assistant to the Minister of Economic Development, Job Creation and Trade, told the legislature during question period that the Progressive Conservatives will do everything in their power to help affected families.
We know on this side of the house how important those manufacturing jobs are. In fact, they're the lifeblood of so many of our communities. That's why we put forward $11 billion in solutions to keep businesses afloat and keep workers working, bringing home those paychecks and being able to put food on the table for their families.
The province Monday announced $1.3 billion over 3 years into the Ontario-made manufacturing investment tax credit, hoping to entice more investment in the manufacturing sector, claiming this will support more than 830,000 jobs. GM says it will return to a two-shift operation in Oshawa. That facility manufactures Chevrolet Silverados for North American distribution. The layoffs are expected to come into effect within 6 months. Reporting for the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
Hey, I'm Anastasia Avakumova in beautiful British Columbia, and you are tuned to Viewpoints.
Monday, May 5th was Red Dress Day and the National Day of Awareness and Remembrance for the missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit people in Canada. On that day, red dresses were hung throughout all three campuses of Simon Fraser University and, of course, all across Canada. A red dress hanging from a window, a porch, or a doorway is a symbol and a reminder of the ongoing epidemic of missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit people. The number of victims of the ongoing tragedy is contested. A 2014 Royal Canadian Mounted Police report identified close to 1,200 Indigenous women and girls who went missing or were murdered in Canada between 1980 and 2012. However, Indigenous groups place this number at more than 4,000, citing under-reporting and ineffective data keeping as reasons for the discrepancy. Here's Jesse Winsloff in Burnaby, British Columbia.
At the entrance of the Burnaby campus's Student Union building, A memorial display has been set up by SFU's Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office, or SVSPO, and the Women's Center, giving students, staff, and community members the opportunity to remember, memorialize, and pay tribute. Konstantin Lazitsky, a staff member at Out on Campus, SFU's 2S LGBTQI+ student organization, attended the memorial.
I think it's a very powerful symbol of the red dress because it is so striking and so visual, and that it reminds you just seeing one or two, and then you start seeing more and more of them around campus, seeing them on different campuses, seeing them in the community, just to give you a tangible way to realize the scope of what is happening and how it isn't just, oh, somebody else's cousin or sibling is lost, or somebody else in the community that I'm not really connected to. All of those stories are real, but they may not connect to you in, on the same way as it is hundreds and thousands of people that should be here, that should be in community, that should be still doing everything they wish to do, but instead they're not here with us. And so I think it is a way to bring some sort of symbol of them back, to bring something that was taken away, that is no longer here, to bring the people who are important back into the communities where they matter. And so I think it is so important to see visible and proud declarations that this is a day to remember all of the folks that were taken and they're gone, and that we're hoping will one day be returned to their communities.
Paula Quilos-Cluz is an educator with the SVSPO and helped organize the memorial.
Today we are hosting awareness tables and memorials in the three different SFU campuses in Vancouver, Burnaby, and Surrey. We wanted to make sure that non-Indigenous people have a space where they can come and honor missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls and Two-Spirit folks, learn more about it, what actions they can take, to reflect also on their own commitment in how we can change this epidemic as well, and then to have a space to meet with other people and maybe do some coloring pages and some pins, also bring offerings to the memorial table, or they can take one of the flowers that we have there and they can bring it back to the land or a park close to their home, thinking about all those sisters and friends and grandmas and aunties and the daughter of someone and some other folks who are no longer here because of this colonial epidemic that is happening in Canada. The Red Dress started as a campaign many years ago that was entitled the Red Dress Project, and it was launched in 2014 by Métis artist Jamie Black. And what this artist wanted to do was to honoring all these women who are no longer here with one red dress. So that is the symbolism of the red dress, the ones that are not here, but that again are present, and it should be in all our memories to remember that is not something that we need to forget.
Quilos-Cluz started by connecting with Indigenous-led organizations on campus.
It was very important first to consult with the staff from Indigenous Student Center, as we wanted to, of course, honor the Indigenous voices and how we could do this in a respectful way.
This consultation helped ensure the event was culturally appropriate, and the collaboration led to a display that is engaging and interactive.
I thought that having a memorial table is really important, just to pace yourself and stand in front of this table and reflect what is happening here, and also make the table interactive. So that's why we invite people to bring offerings like a leaf or a stone or anything that they wanted to bring to the table. But if they couldn't, then they will have the possibility to take something from the table and connect with the land, because we know that Indigenous folks are connected with the land, and then the land is also part of their lives. So as a way to kind of honoring both things.
Julia Lane is one of the many people who stopped by the memorial.
I am here because I think it's incredibly important on this day, but also all days, for us to remember and hold very close in our hearts the kin who we have in the larger human context of being related to one another who have been stolen from us, whether that is being murdered or by being stolen and they are now what we would call missing, Indigenous women and girls and Two-Spirit folks, and recognizing that that is a really horrifying, tragic, and violent part of ongoing colonization in these lands. I'm feeling, I came in feeling overwhelmed, so I'm feeling overwhelmed, but I'm also feeling really grateful to the folks who put it together and put it on as a place for us to hold those feelings of sadness and overwhelm together. And I'm feeling very grateful for the invitation that I was offered to take a rose and to bring the rose to the land, because it feels like an active thing that I can do and an opportunity to remember the women and the girls and the Two-Spirit people, and also hold beauty and remember that there is beauty in addition to all of the harm and the hurt and the sadness.
One of the activities at the memorial prompted visitors to take a piece of paper shaped like a dress and write down actions to help raise awareness and work towards ending the epidemic of missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit people. As Lane explains, it can be a daunting challenge.
One of the things that I've been reflecting on recently is just like recognizing and naming the all the like really deeply insidious ways that violence is interconnected. Violence against so many folks, violence against women, and violence against the land. And so recognizing these intersections and these interconnections and naming them and calling them out and being really consistent about that, so that we are able to challenge the more like insidious forms of this kinds of toxicity and violence when it comes up, might be a way that we help to keep it from escalating into the really extreme forms of violence that also continue to happen.
Regardless of what suggestions might be made, Kilos Clues hopes that students and community members can take something hopeful and useful away from the memorial.
So just to reflect and learn more about the history of Canada, because there could be some students that maybe are just arriving, they don't know what happened before. So learn more about the history. They can hang a red dress in their window, or they can wear all this week red if they want. Also reading the final report from the National Inquiry of Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls, and see how they can work in one of those actions, and also as individuals, an invitation to reflect what as change makers, because we are all change makers in this community, they can do in order to bring more awareness or share this with family or talk with their partner, with their friend, and support different Indigenous initiatives here on campus and also outside of campus, challenge lots of biases and stereotypes towards Indigenous people. So there are so many ways that folks can create action towards this. It could be something small, something big, but at the end of the day, if we are actioning something, then we're making a difference.
On the unceded territory of the Hunkaminam and Squamish-speaking peoples, I'm Jesse Wensloff.
And that's all for us at Viewpoints. Thanks to our LGI journalists, Jesse Wensloff, Rick Conrad, Ryan Funk, Tanya Oregon, Dan Jones, and William Belico. Our national editors are Victoria Fenner and Conrad Fox. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassin. Thanks for having us this week. And until the next, ciao.
questions or comments, our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. Radio@frequencynews.ca.